Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
If they ever get the power, and the only thing that has stopped them from imposing their totalitarian theocracy is they just don't have the numbers yet. They don't quite have the numbers.
That's the voice of Dr. Michael Parenti. On this week's show, Dr. Parenti speaks about his book, God and His Demons, taking a look at the dark side of religion and the current and historic hypocrisies. So stay tuned.
Very privileged to have Dr. Michael Parenti, fabulous author. He has taught at colleges and universities in the United States and abroad. Michael Parenti has won awards from Project Censored, the Caucus for a New Political Science, the City of Santa Cruz, New Jersey Peace Action. We're very privileged to have you on our show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Sylvia.
Your book, God and His Demons, brings your critical acumen and rhetorical skills to bear on the dark side of religion, from the many evils committed in the name of holy causes throughout history to the vast hypocrisies that it advocates, past and present. Tell me, what motivated you to write this book?
Just those things that you mentioned, the vast hypocrisies, the evils that are perpetrated in the name of virtue. And I just felt, and I do feel, the world would be a much better place without the kinds of theocratic perpetrators that put up with. This doesn't mean that I write an untrammeled attack on religion per se. I mean, religious belief for some people is a source of gratification, solace, strength, in some way even inspiration. Fine, it's a very rough and very troubled world. I have nothing against people having religious beliefs. I do make note in the book of the selective perceptions that are employed in religion. You know, 100 people are killed and 2 people survive, and the 2 survivors say, God is merciful and wonderful, and He saved us. And you say, well, He could have been a little better with the other 100. Those kinds of things go on all the time. The critique I have is to associate religion with other social institutions through history and to show how it has often played a corrupting role, a role of oppressive social control, a role which involves the expropriation of state funds and monies that hardworking people have to scratch out for a living. Religion has always been associated with the dominant interests of the state. That was true in ancient Rome. You know, Caesar was appointed Pontifex Maximus, which was sort of the leading religious position. It was a position that went to a consul or a senator. Well, we have in the U.S. a religious right, or Christian right, it's sometimes called. We also have a religious left. You don't hear about the religious left because they don't have huge television networks. They don't have 800, 900 radio stations that they've bought up and owned. They don't have millions of dollars. Where does that money come from? That money comes from corporate America. That is, they are financed by the rich and powerful corporate interests in the United States, and which, by the way, in turn enables them to have mass events and mass television outreach, and then enables them to raise lots of money from ordinary Americans, too, who are desperate and lonely and sick and in need of some 2 cents worth of hope that something can get better. Now, what's put out is not only a religious agenda, but a political economic agenda. Pat Robertson even ran for president once. They give the straight conservative mantras on this. Government cannot solve the problems. Government is the problem. Your life is being dominated by these secular liberal elites who are look down on you and are snobs. There's a false populism that's preached here. Us ordinary folk have a right to have our religion. Evolution is just a theory. It's not a fact. As if theory and fact were mutually exclusive in science. which they are not. I discussed that. So religion plays this kind of high-finance, televangelistic, media-driven, money-driven, profit-driven religion is reactionary, it's highly visible, and it's in the service of helping to create a conservative climate of opinion in America. That's one of its vital roles. And in turn, it's been ripping off us taxpayers by getting all sorts of tax benefits, tax reliefs, tax subsidies from the state, you know, little property giveaways. And these religionists have been penetrating all sorts of areas. One of the areas I mentioned is the U.S. military. The U.S. Air Force Academy has been taken over by these true believers. They've appointed 10 fundamentalist ministers. They're constantly putting out a Christ the Warrior message, you know, we are warriors for Christ. That in the U.S. Air Force Academy, you have military officer groups from West Point and Annapolis all joining together and doing the same thing. And this I have in the book, God and His Demons. It's a fundamentalist minister, James Kennedy. He's very well known here in the U.S. He hosts monthly luncheons with members of Congress, and he says as follows, page 184, our job is to reclaim America for Christ, whatever the cost. As the vice regents of God, we are to exercise godly dominion and influence over our neighborhoods, our schools, our government, our literature and arts, our sports arenas, our entertainment media, our news media, our scientific endeavors, in short, over every aspect and instrument of human society. And then there's one by Randall Terry, a right-wing fundamentalist leader, and he says, I just want you to let a wave of intolerance wash over you, he says to this huge audience. Our goal is a Christian nation. We are called by God to conquer this country. We don't want equal time. We don't want pluralism, unquote. So they want it all is really what they want. And there are others who have announced that there's the religionist reconstructionist, they call. They've announced that someday only Christians will be allowed to vote, and they must be publicly acclaimed and publicly sworn devout Christians. What the creationists are doing is trying to focus on the fact that evolution is a theory and not a fact. Therefore, it's just a speculation. And they posit these two things. One is speculation, which is theory. They're using the word theory as laymen often do, which is just spinning something off your head. You know, well, my theory is, I think, I can't prove it, and I don't know, but I have a theory, this or that. That's not the way theory is used in science. Theory is the gold standard of science. That's what you go for, a verifiable theory. And so the facts are mobilized and tested against the theory. So theory, a good theory, has explanatory power. It makes sense of your facts. Now, why do they focus on the theory of evolution? Because that, just as you're pointing out, that targets Genesis. The theory of evolution, if it's true, then the Bible's first book and core opening paragraphs are just a mythology, which in fact they are. And that's not a theory, that's a fact. This is what I would say about that.
As you point this out, I was thinking about the incredible usefulness of having some sort of divine theory to answer all the things that don't seem to go right in society. You know, why we have endless war, why we have terrible areas that are just consumed by poverty and misery, and, you know, if it's God's will.
That's the attraction of religion. It has an answer for everything. People are killing each other. Well, they've lost their way. They've lost God. People are hungry and starving. You know, they've gone the wrong way. Or if you're lonely, well, Jesus will come and will comfort you. And it's a remarkable commodity, religion. I mean, nobody can market. There's no CEO, there's no entrepreneur, there's no reformer or revolutionary who can come forth with a commodity of this sort that can solve or speak to every condition that you suffer or enjoy or whatever. You're lonely and miserable, Jesus is your friend, and he will take care of you, and he'll be your companion and take you by the hand. You're sick and all that, Jesus will heal you. If he doesn't heal you, you'll die, and instead of Instead of having an eternity of non-existence and obliteration, the very same eternity you had before you were born, you will now go up to heaven and you will have an eternity of absolute joy and happiness of a kind that can't even be found on this earth. You're broke and you need money. Jesus will provide. Money will come. You just send us ministry here. You now, Sylvia, you just send Reverend Michael here. Your $20 when your Social Security check comes in at the end of the month. You send me a piece of it, and then I'll do these prayers. The ministry here does your prayers, and it's going to come back to you tenfold. You're going to get money will come in the mail, or some relative will show up with a big pile of money. And then they tell a little story of something like that happening. And these poor people just start sending their money in. There's lots of different tendencies. There's the fundamentalist, suffer in silence and don't be a crybaby kind of Mother Teresa religion. Then there's also what's called the prosperity theology religion, which is this sort of thing that not only are you going to go to heaven, but you're going to have a good life here now. You're going to be a winner, not a whiner, they'll say, and get out there, and you'll have a great time. God will provide. God, look at me. Look at me. And the minister will get to look at me. And they overlook a little fact that he got rich by taking money from his parishioners, from his congregation.
And that's a very important point to make, because in society we have, just like market capitalism has become a form of religion, for many people they believe that anyone can become rich, anyone can be a millionaire. They just have to work hard. You just have to believe in God and God will provide. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about
capitalism. Yeah.
The significance of this correlation, because I think it really connects to the cultural fabric of individualism that we have created, right? It's about this individual relationship with some divine entity, and that's where the source is. None of this collective responsibility of the kind of society we live in.
Totally absent from all of these preachments is any sense of collective action together for social betterment, for advancing decent human services, better housing, better paying jobs, a cleaner environment, all those things. To the extent that there's any kind of collective action that is induced or encouraged, it is around reactionary issues. You know, it's around depriving gay people of their constitutional rights. It's around public displays of religious artifacts and symbols and such. And it's around super patriotism, and I wrote a book called Super Patriotism, and religion plays a key role in that sort of thing. It's around denouncing the government, because when it does any kind of reformist or liberal or human services functions, but worshiping the state with its guns and its money and its might. A lot of these religionists, these people of love and God and peace and all, they're all supporting the wars that have been launched by the U.S. imperialists all over the world. They support these wars. And, of course, these wars help create mirror images in these other countries, because you've got the Islamic fundament. Not that all Muslims are fundamentalists. In these countries, you do have these extremists who also hold to the same view. And when people talk about these Taliban and these imams who say, we don't want the idols of the West, your feminism and your democracy and your free speech. We want the law of Sharia to rule. And they already control several countries, including a country like Saudi Arabia. I say, yes, those are real threats, but please also be aware that we've got our own homegrown Taliban right here in the U.S., the Jesus-worshipping Taliban, who, if they ever get the power, and the only thing that has stopped them from imposing their totalitarian theocracy is they just don't have the numbers yet. They don't quite have the numbers. And I point out in my book, God and His Demons, I point out that there's been some encouragement in recent years. The numbers of people who identify themselves as non-believers has increased. That's the only cohort that's growing in size in the United States. The various religious groups are pretty much the same in percentage of people that they have in adherence. They haven't there hasn't been any really big dramatic growth.
We are encouraged not to focus on the material needs of people, the material of hunger and thirst and, you know, the physical reality that climate change, if we do not change our habits, will have extreme consequences for the global south, for people who live in the global south. Can you talk a little bit about how this relationship by separating, you know, the natural world, you know, from this divine sphere that we're supposed to aspire to, limits our ability to make those connections?
That's the whole essence of the religion, that they do teach fear. They teach you fear of gays, fear of secular humanists, fear of the media, fear of the federal government, fear of this or that. And the things they should fear, like ecological crises, like global warming, like poverty and misery and economic catastrophes due to swindlers and plunderers and corporate thieves, the things they should fear to defend their own interests, they don't fear. They don't. They give their allegiance to those people. They've been led astray. And their view of the world is really a view of a material world that you just play upon, use any way you want and as God may want. And in fact, many of them even feel that the deteriorating ecological health of the planet, the survival, is fine. It's further evidence of the apocalypse coming. You know, the rapture people are waiting. They think this is all very fine, that the Arctic is melting down. And first of all, let's get our priorities right. First of all, it'll mean more profits and more Arctic oil drilling for the big rich corporations. It'll mean a Northwest Passage, which will cut transportation costs and bring more profits. And actually may mean total disaster for all of us, you know, the disruption of the Gulf Streams and the temperate zones, and the agricultural bases will be destroyed in these temperate zones, and all these kind of things. And we may just be a matter of years away from that, right in our own lifetimes. And yet they're oblivious to all of that. You know, if those things happen, that's just God's punishment. So they're just waiting to fly up into the sky when the big second coming comes. It's hard to not believe that we're in the 13th century, but we aren't in the 13th century, but we've got people thinking like this with a fervor and a surety as anything happening back in those days.
But in your previous book, which is also a fantastic book, Contrary Notions, you talk about how the free market played a key role, and you talk about how President Bush's agenda had been to cut government service, to cut services and to rely on the private sector. And then, of course, when the floods happened, he went on radio and said, oh, we couldn't possibly have anticipated. And it's sort of this naivety, you know, that God works in mysterious ways. So who are the demons then that are prevented us, and who are the real demons that we should fear in society?
Well, you should add something to the Bush when he said we couldn't possibly anticipate this. I pointed out that there had been statements made by Army Corps of Engineers and all sorts of people about that very catastrophe waiting to be happening. There were dozens of all sorts of knowing people strategically placed who were anticipating and clamoring about it completely.
What is the relationship between the media and the promotion of religion as such? If you go to a service, you'll hear of people speaking about how the media is biased against them, but it seems to me they're one of their, you know, allies.
Yeah, the media are owned by big, rich corporations, and they never go beyond, and they never stray beyond certain boundaries, and they serve the powers that be, and they're the mouthpiece for the powers that be. But they're not quite fascist enough, they're not quite reactionary enough. So NBC, CNN, ABC, they're not quite like Fox Network. Fox is really what they call clear and balanced. Fox Network has people who follow a party line, and every day they will often be using the exact same phrases and pounding home the same right-wing message. To the extent that the other networks don't do that as blatantly and as rigorously as Fox, they are called failing in saying the truth. That's all. Also, there are things that are reported in the media that are sometimes very revealing if you know how to connect the dots. If you report that Katrina came along and the dikes were reportedly insufficient, but nothing was done about it, and they broke and they flooded every place, that's an objective fact, but these people would say, oh, you're giving the liberal line to try to make President Bush look bad. So my point is that the reason they complain about a liberal media, it rarely strays from very narrow mainstream portion of the political spectrum. The reason they complain of liberal media is that within that narrow spectrum, they do sometimes report actual facts, and those facts can often speak for themselves. Like the media had to report the economic crises, and they even made the mistake and had the temerity of pointing out that much of it was due to the nefarious doings of finance capital on Wall Street. So when they do that, that's when these right-wingers come out and say, oh, we have a liberal media that's biased against business and against capital, and they're socialistically leaning and all that.
Many people fail to see a link between a class system where economically dominant class, it's also the dominant political class. If you could talk a little bit about the relationship and how religion ties into this.
By definition, a class society means there's a different and conflicting relationship of one portion of the population versus the other in regard to their relationship to the resources of society, the means of production, the land, the labor, the natural resources, the markets and the capital and all that. Religion has historically always played a key role. All through Christendom for 2,000 years, the religious rich higher clergy were colluded with and often drawn from the very families of the very rich lords and ladies that owned most of Europe. So they were another part of it. Parish priest would come from the poor class. So the church hierarchy itself reflected the class structure of secular society and wealth.
The way in which religion has been used by the politically powerful, the dominant class, the elites, to promote wars, to promote aggression in other parts of the world. The church has played in not only advocating, but almost legitimizing the aggression against people.
The religious fundamentalists of other countries feed right into the religious fundamentalists in the Western countries. I mean, the Christian fundamentalists and the Islamic fundamentalists owe a lot to each other in terms of providing an excuse for war and hatred of each other. We should point out that a lot of these countries in the Middle East and Central Asia have had secular, pluralistic, coalition-driven, democratic revolutions, and or could have developed in that direction if it weren't for the pressures of the U.S. I'm talking about Lebanon, Syria, Iraq before Saddam Hussein and before the CIA and Saddam Hussein came in. Afghanistan before the Mujahideen and the U.S. went in and destroyed what was happening there. You can go on, all these various countries, and all of those were overthrown. And when you got this brand of Islamic extremism arising, many of them made clear, they said, we're not attacking you for who you are. We're attacking you for what you've been doing to us, and we just want you to get out of here. Even Osama bin Laden said at some point in the Iraqi war, he said, ours is a defensive action. If you just get away and leave us alone, we will leave you alone. Religion has been an excuse or a cover for attacking and for extending the empire.
What are we to do then?
One of the things that religion does is kill a lot of people. I mean, it is strikingly violent. And among the groups they kill are each other. In the very first generation of Christianity, some of the worst killings of certain Christian denominations were perpetrated by other competing Christian denominations. The slaughter and the carnage in Iraq, for instance, the sectarian, it's between Sunni and Shia, identical. They're both identical denominations, except one believes that the 12th apostle hasn't died and he will return, and the other does not believe that. And that's what they seem to be killing each other over. Religion is used in Central America. The Pentecostals came in to tell people that the reason they have suffered, the reason their revolutionary and liberation movements have been destroyed and the death squads killed so many of them, and Rios Monte in Guatemala went in and burned down and massacred 600 villages, not villagers, but villages, hundreds of thousands of people are killed. The reason all of this happened to them is because they've lost their way and they haven't been virtuous and they haven't shown the proper piety. And the same kind of thing has happened in Iraq. As I said, it had a secular revolution back in 1968 in which the Iraqi coalition government made up of Democrats and constitutionalists and reformers and communists even, and they threw out the British Petroleum oil companies. They threw out the American oil companies. They nationalized the industries. They nationalized most of the economy. And people were getting along quite well. There wasn't a fight. But once you divide them, once you put them under stress and such, you can use these kind of differences to pit them against each other or to get them in line behind a repressive government that tells them, if you obey God in this way and that way, then things will get better for you.
What is the way out? Do we have a way out of this?
As I say, I'm not a hardcore atheist or even materialist. I mean, I'm a philosophical materialist. I don't believe that there are ideas separate from material forces and humans and such that act upon us like mystical forces and all that. I do not believe that. I'm still open to the idea that, after all, we do live in this total cosmological wonder and mystery, and we have no idea what the hell it is. And the materialist position on this is very unsatisfactory for many people. So they may turn to religious thought, the mystics, or go to retreats, or go to meditations, or try to do the impossible. The impossible is, as Giordano Bruno said back in 1585 or so, I dedicated the book to him. He was burned alive at 1600 by the Roman Church. We cannot comprehend this cosmos, you know. And generally, there are people who are unsatisfied, and I'm one of them, unsatisfied with the simple materialist position, which is to say, these are questions that are outside of the range of this of scientific inquiry, and maybe someday they will be within the range of scientific inquiry, but now they're not to be discussed. Well, no, they can be discussed. I mean, Hegel discussed them, and others. Even Albert Einstein discusses it. He said, you know, you try to get your mind around this incredible wonderment and whatever else, and that feeling of what is out there, what can it be, where's it going, and so forth. That's what I call my religion. You know, he complained himself that if Einstein couldn't get his mind around this universe, then how could any of us? And there are people who want to look at that whole cosmic force and that whole cosmology and that whole mystical process and that whole trying to get my separateness back to a totality and a oneness on certain levels of experience. They insist upon calling that God. I mean, I get so much from them. I mean, constantly saying, well, this is God, though. You see, you're tone deaf, but there is this kind of God, and it had nothing to do with organized religion. And I say, if you want to call that God and it makes you feel happy and good, then call it God. See, I don't really care what you believe. Honestly, don't care. Just as long as it's tolerant and just as long as it's not aggrandizing and it's not pitting organized forces against my rights as a human being.
Thank you so much for being with us. Tell us, how can our audience access your book?
My website is michaelparenti.org. They could always order it online, or they could ask a bookstore for it.
Thank you again for being with us.
Right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.